closed. Cars came and went. After a while, all I could hear was a Kinley lumbering around in the kitchen. About 8, he knocked on the door and poked his head in. I was already sitting up, and he smiled in greeting.
Good morning, prom queen.
I looked across the room at the dress. I need to get rid of that before it fell apart. He came in with 2 plates of food and sat on the bed with me while we ate. The meal tasted completely average, which led me to believe he'd made it. With his history of disastrous cooking, I appreciated the effort.
So Ben and Julie are gone for most of the day. Do you want to do a little sightseeing, or is there somewhere you need to go?
I shook my head.
This is a really pretty area, totally different from Miami. I remember you saying you grew up kind of all over the place, but have you ever been to Maine?
I thought back. No.
So I've decided that we're going to have the best day. Nothing bad is allowed to happen, and if it does, we'll find the bright side. I think we both deserve a good day, don't you?
I nodded.
Good. I really wanted to thank you for listening to me talk about my parents last night. Ben is like a brother to me, and Julie, well.
I widened my eyes and brought up my hands.
Yeah, she's the best. I'm really glad they took me in, but I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to talk to them.
I nudged him with my elbow, hoping he knew I didn't mind being his sounding board in the slightest.
And thanks for sharing about your family, too. I know it's not easy to talk about.
I shrugged. It was too complicated to explain that I miss them and yet could barely remember them.
This might sound weird, but right after we met, I did some research. I thought it was kind of fascinating that you could hear but not speak. I found out that people who aren't deaf are usually mute for one of 2 reasons. Either it's a physical thing, like a deformed tongue or something, or it's because something happened and emotionally they can't speak anymore. I wondered.
I held up a number 2. It hurts so much to speak, to sing, to laugh. My voice was death, and I hated it.
Okay, well, then I'll cross my fingers that one day it'll be possible for you again. I have this feeling you have enough thoughts to fill books, and I'd love to hear them.
His eyes were soft, and that safe feeling that surrounded him enveloped me. There was a look of wonder on his face as he watched me, and despite our mutual sorrow, I smiled at him. 16. Julie had left me a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, and a cardigan. As I rinsed my mouth out in the bathroom and brought my gaze up to the mirror, I took a good look at myself. My hair had those loose, beachy waves in it that some girls try to create artificially, and my eyes were bright, full of expectation. Something about being a siren seemed to accentuate the best of our features, but today I thought I was pretty, just on my own. I felt young and perfectly, wonderfully normal. I galloped down the stairs and found Akinley sitting in front of the TV, ready to go in his own set of jeans and a cotton shirt. I noticed he'd also shaved and pulled his long hair up into a little bun.
Okay,
he announced.
You want to get out for a bit? I've got the truck.
He waved the keys in the air. I nodded enthusiastically. It was barely 9 in the morning. We had a whole day to play.
We are still unsure of the cause, a newscaster replied on screen. We might be looking at another mystery of the Bermuda Triangle here.
I couldn't turn away from the images of debris floating on the water, deck chairs and loose clothes and flowers.
Rescue workers are still hoping to find survivors, but currently no one is here to give any insight as to what caused the sinking. According to reports, the ship veered off course, going several miles in a direct line to this spot before suddenly capsizing. But the weather was clear, and there are no records of a distress signal coming from the captain or crew, so the reason for the sinking is truly a mystery. We're getting reports of family members posting images of missing passengers online, but easily the most heartbreaking story from this is the loss of Karen and Michael Samuels, who had been married only hours before. Our thoughts are with them and their families and close friends, all of whom were lost in the sinking.
I grabbed the remote out of Akinley's grasp,
smashing buttons, trying to cut it off.
Hey, hey, hey,
he said, taking hold of my hands. I gripped the remote as he aimed it and flicked off the TV, holding on to me the whole time. My breathing was ragged. Typically, I would have called that information useful, something I could write in my scrapbook. But seeing a picture of Karen and Michael kissing with their cheering friends behind them, lives lost because they wanted to support them, was too much.
You okay?
I swallowed. He stared at me as I gazed at the dark television.
I have a hard time watching the news sometimes, too. There's too much bad in the world.
I nodded.
But you know what? That didn't even happen today. It happened yesterday. And today is going to be the best day, remember?
I let the tension out of my body, the remote falling out of my grip and into Akinley's. He was right. It was only one day, and I couldn't have it ever again. For once, I had to shrug off the sadness. I couldn't change what had happened, but I could choose to enjoy today. I signed my thanks.
You're welcome,
he guessed. And I smiled, nodding, grateful for his presence.
Come on, prom queen. You can't have the best day ever unless you get in the best truck ever.
Always the gentleman, he walked me to the passenger side and opened the door for me. April in the South meant getting ready for shorts, but here, the cold hand of winter still pinched at the air. With the windows cracked, we got a wonderful breeze as we headed around town.
Hey, Mrs. Jenkins,
Akinley called as we drove past an older woman sitting on her porch. He greeted or waved to nearly everyone whose path we crossed, seeming to be friendly with the entirety of his small town, and that energy helped lift my mood. I took in the scenery with a fresh sense of awe. We had spent so much time in big cities over the years, and I wasn't used to overgrown lawns or the stretches of empty land that led down to the shore. The paint colors on all the houses were muted, and I wasn't sure if that was by choice or if the sun had worn them down over time.
Any of this look familiar?
He asked as we drove on a long, gently winding road.
Anything that could help you remember exactly how you got here?
We passed a church and houses with metal lawn art. Boats were stuck in sandbars, waiting for high tide to come and rescue them. I noted several signs for lobster, as if no one knew where to find it. I shook my head. It was the truth. I hadn't seen a bit of this in my life before.
You really must have washed up on shore then. This is the only way into Port Clyde. I guess yesterday was a rough day at sea all around.
I shook my head. He had no idea. He hummed along to the music on the radio, blurting out the occasional lyric, then looking embarrassed.
Never was much of a singer. My mom, she was good.
He raised a finger and pointed to the side of the road. Two small wooden crosses stood next to a tree with bark that was still healing. I thought that if I had to go past the spot of my sinking any time I wanted to go somewhere, my heart would cave in on itself. But he smiled as if this place was a reminder that they'd lived, not that they died. He kissed his pointer and middle fingers twice quickly and blew a simple hello. And as we passed, his mood stayed cheerful, as if he was carrying them with him. When we finally got to the end of the road, Akinley took a right, and it looked for a moment like we were going to be on another one of these rural roads. But signs of civilization slowly started cropping up. A fast food chain, a home improvement store, a gas station with illuminated signs. We drove on and on until the road hooked around, and I saw the ocean resting against yet another harbor. I could still hear her calling me, a constant, soft pleading, and I purposefully tried to tune her out. I would have to go back soon enough. For now, I was following Akinley's lead. Today belonged to us. We parked along the street. I turned to look at Akinley, and he answered the question in my eyes.
We're in Rockland. It's the biggest town nearby.
I let myself out of the truck before Akinley could get to my door, but he was by my side quickly.
It's not much, but it's more than Port Clyde. I thought we could look around.
I signed yes, and he did it back.
That's three I've got now. You might need to give me some lessons at some point.
I nodded. I was up for anything that let us talk.
So there is a jewelry store, some ice cream. That place doesn't actually open for a few hours, but it's so good. We're totally going there. Books are this way.
I clapped.
Good choice. Let's go.
It was a weekday, and the streets were mostly empty. I had heard people reminisce about old Main Street charm before, and now I understood the appeal. There was a sense of intimacy here, of predictability. I bet there were festivals and street fairs, Christmas parades down this very road. I walked dreamily toward the bookstore, only snapping to when my fingers accidentally brushed against Akinley's. He said nothing, but laughed a little.
This is it.
A friendly clerk greeted us as we entered. Unlike the polished, massive bookstores in the city, this one was quaint. A hodgepodge of decorations adorned the walls, making everything feel quirky and personal. I instantly dragged my fingers across a shelf of book spines, in love with each one already. Books were a safe place, a world apart from my own. No matter what had happened that day, that year, there was always a story in which someone overcame their darkest hour. I wasn't alone. It wasn't long until I found the highlight of the store, the children's section. There was a tiny house with two pillows inside, the roof itself a bookshelf on one side. Up against it was a small desk with a place for children to leave a letter in a mailbox and take one for themselves, and little plastic cubes with words printed on each side, intended for making poetry.
My queen, Akinley whispered. Your palace awaits.
He gestured grandly to the tiny house. I crawled in, ducking my head to fit. I pulled a handful of discarded books up into my arms while Akinley grabbed the poetry cubes. We were pressed together in the cramped space, and my whole right side was warmed by his skin. I thumbed through stories about pirates, angry vegetables, and budding ballerinas. Akinley rolled the blocks in his hands, laughing at his options. He placed four cubes reading, "The blue is excellent," across my lap. I gave a thumbs up and wrote out, "Smell this sky." He inhaled deeply.
That's some good sky.
He flipped the cubes over and over.
Do you think kids know what melodic means?
I nodded. 80 years of watching from the sidelines had given me time to observe that children were smarter than people gave them credit for.
I've never really thought about how funny words are. Like, we can write them out or speak, but then there are how many languages in the world? And then there's Braille and sign language. It's kind of remarkable.
I agreed. Words, sounds, communication. My world revolved around these things. That and water.
You're fluent in sign language, right?
I nodded. He pulled back just a little so he could see me.
Tell me a story, like with signs. Tell me the truest story you know.
Akinley's face was expectant and happy. I lifted my eyes to the ceiling, thinking, he wouldn't understand any of this. I have three sisters, Mieka, Elizabeth, and Padma. The ocean is my mother, and we're fighting. That's all I know about myself anymore. I'm certain there used to be more, but I've forgotten it. Altogether, I've lived 100 years. I hold on to strange things, like the look of the walls on that ship, and completely forget others, like if I used to have a best friend. Some days, I don't know what there's left to live for. I try to memorialize the lives I've helped to take, but I'm not sure it does any good. And I try to take care of my sisters, but I don't think that's enough by itself. I don't think anyone could exist for another person for their entire life. I paused. Maybe they could, though, if they found the right person. At this moment, I'm considering living for you, but you'd never, ever know. I fought to keep a smile on my face. No matter what, I was determined that today was going to be a good day.
Besides the part where you pointed to me, I didn't understand a thing. But that was really beautiful. You make me want to learn.
He held up two fingers.
That's the second time you've inspired me.
I squinted, trying to recall what I could have possibly said or done.
Remember back in Florida when you said I should look into social work? I checked it out. There were tons of things that felt perfect for me. I love kids. I could help kids.
I signed yes over and over.
Intuitive,
he pointed at me.
That's what you are.
With that, he started playing with the blocks again, as if he was hunting for a specific word. I picked up another book, and we sat there in the happiest silence I'd ever known. When it was time to leave, we bought the last book I'd been holding, and as we walked toward the ice cream shop, our hands brushed together again. This time, neither of us flinched. 17. I took a big bite of mint chocolate chip ice cream and closed my eyes appreciatively as the creamy sweetness spread over my tongue.
Told you about the ice cream, Akinley said. I've heard that people started religions around this stuff.
Besides the lobster, he told me the area was also famous for its ice cream. I could see why.
This was one of the things I missed most down at school. This ice cream. Watching sports with Dad was another. I mean, it should have been something I could do with anyone, but it always felt more fun with him. My mom's smell?
He shook his head at himself.
It's weird, all the things that go into that feeling of being home. And then it's strange to have to change it.
I wanted to scream out that I knew exactly what he meant. How sometimes the things that made home, home, weren't even things you liked. How I was tired of cool skin and salt. How I had seen sisters and cities come and go over the decades, and it made it hard to know how our little family was going to feel any given year. How it made you wary of letting yourself get comfortable in any place for very long.
What's your home like?
He asked. I searched my memories, trying to find one place that felt like somewhere I really belonged. For all the time we'd spent in an area, for all the cities we went to, none of them felt like a safe space to fall. I shrugged and poked my spoon at my ice cream. I remembered so many things, but home wasn't something definable for me.
It's okay if you don't want to talk about it. One day you'll make new memories, a new home,
he said sadly, reassuringly.
We both will.
I didn't want to fall for the sincerity in his voice, that unselfish stare in his eyes that promised he'd make sure to put all the broken pieces of my life back together. It was too hard to fight, though, so I didn't. I watched this unassuming, calming boy, thinking he had no idea how extraordinary he was. You feel so safe, I thought.
So there are plenty of other shops we can look at, or we can go back to Port Clyde.
Akinley checked the time on his phone.
Ben should be nearly done, and Julie only had the one appointment.
I squinted.
She's a hair and makeup artist. Not tons of clientele in the town, but she's willing to travel, and she's good, so she's usually booked. Today was a wedding, and when there are formals like homecoming and stuff, she's always busy.
He bit the inside of his cheek, making a face.
Sometimes she tries things out on Ben and me.
I smiled, picturing them in eyeshadow and blush. Akinley picked up his phone, swiping his thumb across the screen.
This was some sort of hydrating mask.
He showed me a picture of him and Ben with green stuff smeared across their cheeks. Ben had a beer in his hand, and Akinley had a glass of milk. They made faces as they clinked them together in a toast. I had to cover my mouth to hold in the laugh.
Let that be a sign of how much I trust you. No one's seen that picture. I'm only keeping it in case I need to blackmail Ben someday.
I drummed my fingers on the table, the rat-a-tat the closest I could come to laughing. He chuckled at the sound, glanced at the picture again, and shook his head.
They're great. I'd be lost without them.
I placed my hand on his, touched by his humanness, his ability to care despite his pain, and his little hint of a smile that lingered when there wasn't anything to smile about. Akinley flipped his palm over, wrapping his fingers around mine. He propped up his head with his other arm, staring at me. I took the same pose, studying this impossible boy. His eyes were so blue, I felt a little breathless staring into them. Akinley rubbed his thumb across the back of my hand.
Come on, prom queen. Let's go home.
He didn't let go of my hand. Not when he threw away his trash, Not when he held the door for the elderly couple coming in for a post-lunch treat. Not when the sidewalk was so crowded I had to duck behind him. I could still hear the ocean calling me, and I ignored her. The drive back to Port Clyde felt long. He didn't turn the radio back on, and he didn't try to speak. It felt as if we were sizing each other up. The more he watched me, the more I sensed he was guessing there was something otherworldly about me. The longer I looked at him, the more I wondered if he could handle being exposed to me, to my realm, for more than these few hours. We drove past the artist residency, the tourist pulling into the lone bed and breakfast, and sweet Miss Jenkins, who was still parked on her porch with a pitcher of tea. When we reached the house, another car and a scooter were also in the driveway, so I guess the others were there. McKinley put his hands in his pockets, his eyes downcast as we went up the steps and across the porch. Opening the door, we came upon Ben wrapping his arms around Julie from behind. Julie bent over in laughter.
"One kiss,"
he demanded.
"You stink,"
she protested, hitting him with a spatula.
"But I love you."
I wanted to cry at how beautiful that tiny moment was. Couples were like sirens, making their own languages and signs, their own worlds. McKinley cleared his throat, alerting them to our presence.
"Whoa, wow, you look way less terrifying when you aren't sopping wet and dressed like royalty."
Ben laughed at himself, gave the now disarmed Julie a quick kiss on the cheek, and ran upstairs.
"Shower. See you guys in a sec."
Julie's gaze followed him affectionately before she sighed and faced us. "You hungry?" McKinley poked out his belly and rubbed it.
"I'm full of ice cream. You?"
I signed, "Okay," a gesture that I knew he would understand.
"All right, I'll just finish this up for Ben."
She eyed me.
"You look way better in my clothes than I do."
"How was it today?"
McKinley asked, getting some juice from the fridge. Julie beamed.
"Wonderful. Weddings are the best. Well, except for that one earlier this year,"
she amended. McKinley turned to me.
"A few months ago, Julie had a bride throw a glass of champagne at her."
I stared wide-eyed at Julie.
"I'm still not sure how it happened," she said, chuckling. "I vaguely remember an eyelash curler being involved, but once things started flying, I packed my kit and bolted."
"Nothing like that today?"
McKinley spoke to Julie, but his eyes were on me. I tried not to stare back.
"Nope. Positively blissful, and the happy couple should be man and wife by now,"
she commented, checking the clock.
"And Ben had a good morning, too. He also filled the gas in the boat. You," she said, pointing a fork at McKinley, "have got to stop taking it out at night."
He made a face.
"What? Come on.
Those little trips add up."
"Okay, what if I drop traps when I go?"
"If you go."
"Aw, please,"
he whined. Julie laughed, and I sensed she would back down on the debate. Ben would probably be a bit harder to convince. In the middle of this mundane moment, I found myself close to tears. It was refreshing simply to get a peek into a real family. And this one, broken and pieced back together, was better than anything I could imagine. Leaving was going to be harder than I thought, for many reasons. McKinley was staring at me again. I could see, as clear as anything, that he was trying to unravel my secrets. I'm not sure at what point it had turned from suspicion to fact, but he knew something was off. And yet, he put an arm around me.
"Julie, you up for hire tonight?"
Still smiling, she nodded.
"Why do you ask?"
"Colin and I decided to have the best day ever, and I think she needs a night out. Could you help her with that?"
She followed McKinley's gaze to me. Whatever she saw in my face, her own reflected only sympathy.
"Absolutely."
18. Julie didn't ask McKinley or me to pay for her services. Instead, she sent us to the general store, the only store in town, and had us get groceries for her.
"Hey, McKinley, who's your friend?"
greeted the older man behind the counter.
"Colin, friend from school. She's staying for a while."
"A while?" I thought. "Do you have any idea how impossible the last 19 hours have been?"
"Nice to meet you, honey,"
he said, holding out his hand. I shook it, noting how his skin felt like thin paper.
He'd never been a fisherman, for sure.
Is the dip net rented out tonight?
McKinley asked, picking up a basket.
Nope. Good. Colin's going to try some of our best food.
McKinley winked at me, and I followed him, waving goodbye to the older man.
Have you ever had lobster?
He asked. I grimaced. After being a siren, the thought of having seafood kind of felt like eating a very distant relative.
Please tell me this is a joke.
I gave him an awkward smile.
Seriously? Colin, what am I going to do with you?
He teased, continuing down the aisle, grabbing breadcrumbs and soup.
You waltz into town like it's nothing. You're such a chatterbox, I can never get a word in edgewise, and then you confess to the most heinous of crimes.
He shook his head.
Don't tell Ben. He may literally kick you out for that one.
McKinley smiled to himself, dragging his hand down the line of shelves. I did the same, taking in the cool metal. I loved this little store, the feel and smell of it. I wished I could come back to it.
Ouch!
McKinley jerked back his hand.
Be careful.
When he held it up for inspection, there was a thin slice across two of his fingers. I turned to the shelf, seeing the sharp, broken section that must have cut him.
How's your hand?
He asked, flicking his head at my palm. I shook my head, knowing I'd be lacking a cut.
No, really, is it okay?
He reached over and flipped up my hand. Nothing. Not a mark. Not a drop of blood.
Hmm,
he said, a smirk coming to his face.
You must have some really thick skin.
He stared into my eyes, knowing I should be bleeding. There was nothing accusatory or frightened in his expression, merely a hint of curiosity. He sighed.
Sadly, I'm merely a mortal. I should probably get some bandages. Hey, Kurt,
he called.
You need to fix this shelf back here.
I gently pulled back my hand, and he walked around the corner looking for the medical supplies. I stood alone for a moment, trying to calm the rapid beating of my heart. Julie ran her fingers through my hair as we stared into the vanity in her room.
What shampoo do you use? Your hair is like silk, she proclaimed, envy dripping from her voice.
I kept needing to come up with facial expressions that said things for me. How could I make my cheeks say I didn't remember, my forehead express gratitude? I missed words.
Okay, first things first, hair and makeup. And the restaurant isn't very fancy, so maybe we'll skip your absolutely breathtaking but slightly over-the-top gown, and you can just steal something else out of my closet.
I smiled as she plugged in a curling iron and opened something that looked like a tackle box. There weren't any lures inside. Instead, it was filled with powders and blushes, baby wipes, and tubes of mascara. I couldn't help but gawk at the sheer volume of makeup she owned.
I know. It really needs to be cleaned out a bit, but trust me, I've used all of this at least once.
She held up palettes next to my cheek, looking for just the right one.
It was akin to watching Miyaka with her paints. I want to apologize.
She grabbed a brush and started pulling it through my hair.
If we seemed standoffish last night, I'm sorry. It's weird to have someone you don't know in your house.
I nodded enthusiastically. I kept marveling at their kindness in letting me stay.
But McKinley clearly trusts you, and whatever you've been through, I just want you to know you're safe here.
Our eyes met in the mirror, and I saw nothing but compassion in hers.
Honestly, I wouldn't care if you were a mass murderer.
I hoped she didn't notice the way I tensed at her words.
Anyone who could make McKinley smile like that, and he shaved today.
He asked me about cutting his hair.
She shook her head as if these were huge things.
I know that's all superficial, but he's had a hard time caring about much since his parents passed. Did you know about that already?
I nodded.
Good. I would have felt awful if I'd accidentally been a gossip.
She pinned a section of my hair to the side, pulling out small pieces to curl.
I don't know what kind of friendship you two had before, or if it was something more than that, but I feel like he woke up today.
I haven't seen him like this in a while. My lips parted in surprise, because really, everything from before had been so brief, a handful of moments that seemed to amount to nothing in hindsight. But then why had I thought of him so often? Why did he respond to me the way he did? It was one of those moments, sort of like when I thought of Miyaka and Elizabeth befriending each other, when I just had to believe they were meant to meet. In my heart, I wanted to say that Akinlee and I were meant to be together, but I pushed the thought away. I was going to find a way to leave by morning. For everyone's sake, I had to. Akinlee pulled out my chair as I looked around the little restaurant, so small I might not have noticed it if he hadn't pointed it out to me. Buoys hung down from the ceiling along the bar, and I could peek into the exposed kitchen. Out the side door, the dock extended into the water, and the sky was turning pink and purple around the shadow of moored boats. I found myself enamored with Port Clyde. It was small, and there wasn't much to do, but it was bursting with personality. Seeing Akinlee here made him new to me. Yes, he should go back to school, and yes, it was probably good for him to have been exposed to a bigger city. But he was like a gear in this tiny town, and I wondered how all the others managed to turn while he was gone.
Okay, he started. I can't tell if you hate seafood or if you've never had it before.
I held up a number two.
So are you feeling brave enough to at least try lobster?
He made a pouty face and batted his eyes. I smiled. Sure.
I mean, no pressure. I just think you'd love it.
I closed my menu and held my hands up in surrender, and it felt like a huge accomplishment when I made him laugh.
Okay, then.
While we waited, Akinlee brought out the trusty pen and pad from his house. I was going to miss this little thing.
So, what do you think of my town? Be honest,
he said, pointing to the paper.
I want a full report.
It was such a pertinent question that I was starting to wonder if he could read my mind. He gave me some time to get it all out, reading carefully once I was done. It's beautiful here. I like how quaint everything feels, how you seem to know everyone's name. There's a sense of peace, close to perfect.
Close to perfect? You think?
I signed an enthusiastic yes. Now that I'd been in a place like this, where lives connected and crossed, it was easy to see why all those cities had been wrong for me. Anonymity helped, sure, but if you found the right place, with the right kind of people, it was much better going somewhere you might at least get a nod or a wave as you walked home.
I'm really glad you like it here. Really.
We watched the sky turning darker outside the window, and I kept thinking that any moment I'd need to get out of here. I lacked a plausible story, and I really, really didn't want to disappear on him again. A few minutes later, a bright red lobster was set in front of me with a slice of lemon and a bowl of melted butter. I gave pause, feeling strange. You're not a fish, I reminded myself. You're a girl. Using a cracking tool, two forks, and occasionally Akinlee's fingers, I managed to get some of the meat out. In the end, I agreed it was worth the work, and he watched me with satisfaction as I licked butter off my fingers and ate every last piece. I basked in the rhythms of Akinlee's voice, the constantly changing expressions that crossed his face as he talked. He told me more about growing up in this small town, working on his cousin's boat, spending a childhood safe in his parents' love. We split a slice of rich cheesecake, and he took my hand as we left the restaurant.
One more thing, if you don't mind going on a field trip, that is.
I couldn't imagine adding anything else to this day. I knew in my gut this was the time for me to start making excuses. If I had half a brain, I'd tell him to leave me by the general store and pass on my goodbyes to Ben and Julie. But I went with him all the same. We drove around the small town in a matter of minutes, heading by the lighthouse, Ben's home, and too many dense forests to count, until finally we stopped in front of a darkened house. Akinlee parked in the empty driveway, sighing as he took out the keys.
Last stop of the night. Come on.
The house wasn't a mansion, but in comparison to all the other houses in Port Clyde, it might as well have been. Two stories with a wraparound porch and a wide, dormant garden curled along the front steps. Akinlee fiddled with his keys until he found the right one, unlocked the door, and led us into an empty space. The moon was full, but that didn't do much to help us once we got inside. I looked at Akinlee, who grinned and pulled a lighter out of his pocket. He lit one candle, then another, and I suddenly remembered that I had no idea where he was while Julie had dolled me up. I followed him, gazing at his handsome face as the rooms grew brighter, falling in love a little more with every spark. He held one candle in his hand and carried it as he walked.
"My grandpa built this house,"
he said.
"He was a rich old man, so while Dad grew up working on a boat, Mom grew up with a vacation house in Maine."
He gestured to the walls around us.
"Don't think Grandpa was too thrilled when she came one summer and chose to never leave, but I think I ended up being the peacemaker. He was giddy when I was born and spoiled me rotten till he died."
McKinley smiled.
"We held an estate sale after Mom and Dad died. They had some money put aside, but a lot of it went for Mom's medical bills. It hurt too much to keep it all anyway." "There's more,"
he said, nodding his head to the back of the house. We stepped out onto the porch and walked down the slope, getting uncomfortably close to the shouting ocean. I tried not to listen to her words.
"This is one of the few houses that has a beach instead of rocks,"
he bragged, laughing at his own claim. No, there weren't any jagged boulders sticking out, but his beach was maybe 2 feet wide.
"See the light that way? That's the lighthouse, and if we kept following the curve of the coast, we'd be in town."
He smiled, looking back at me, taking my hand in his.
"You like this too?"
He motioned toward his house, and I looked up at it. Even with no one living there, it had life to it, and I couldn't deny the beauty of the craftsmanship. It was then that I felt something trickle across my hand. When I looked back, McKinley had tilted the candle wax over my fingers.
"Hmm,"
he said as if he'd seen something he knew he would. His eyes came back to mine.
"I think that would have burned most people."
I swallowed. I hadn't reacted to the pain at all.
"Listen, Colin, I'm not blind. I don't know what to make of a girl who has no last name, who can't or won't share certain details about her life, who can't speak and doesn't get cut or burned. So I've only got two guesses. Either you are trouble, or you are in trouble. My guess is it's the latter."
I bit my lip, trying not to cry. If the ocean could just stop screaming for a minute, I could think. I wanted to tell him, "No, I am trouble. I am such great trouble to you." But what could I do? He took my face in his hands.
"I'm not a rich man, Colin, but I do own this house. Thanks to Ben and Julie, I've been saving to start my life back up. But until you washed up on shore, I wasn't sure there was much of a point to it. If you want to stay here, I won't let anything hurt you. If you want to get out of whatever you've been in, I don't care what it is. We'll all take care of you."
My heart was completely gone, his in an instant. He wasn't sure what was wrong with me and wanted me to stay anyway. He didn't know what danger I was in, but was ready to fight it for me. And who was I? No one, really. Just a girl. But seeing myself through his eyes, I felt like so much more. So how did I do this? How could I stay? In less than 24 hours, I'd made a few slips, but for McKinley's sake, I could do better. The ocean and my sisters needn't ever know about him. Aisling had taught me that much. And if he really wanted me here, then he'd certainly understand that I might need to disappear for a few hours once a year, maybe less if I was lucky. If he cared for me the way he said he did, the way I knew he did, he'd have to travel away with me before his friends or family started asking questions about my abnormalities. But at my core, I believed for the first time that it was feasible. And then, I really could live for someone. Because despite all the silence and death and the inevitability of my life, he would be there to balance it out. It wasn't fairy tale perfect, but it was possible. I nodded. Of course. Of course I would stay.
Yes?
I nodded. Yes. With my face still cupped in McKinley's hands, he kissed me. It was brief, but it was enough to send fireworks running down my veins.
"You have brought me back from the dead,"
he whispered. He must have noted the dreamy look in my eyes, because almost instantly, He lowered his lips to mine again. I'd waited an eternity for this. I'd have waited all over again if I had to. I was meant to kiss this boy, designed to be held by him. All the careful postures I held melted away, and I pulled him to me, wishing there was a way to be even closer. We were stars. We were music. We were time. When we pulled apart, I was overcome with a delicious dizziness. I felt as if I were a different person, like my skin even hung on my bones in a new way. My saltwater blood was sparkling through me, and I was more alive than I'd ever been. Wow, I breathed. Instantly, I was aware of my mistake. Akinley's eyes dropped, and he shook his head as if he were trying to clear it. Akinley! I cried stupidly, trying to pull him from the daze. He lost his balance, falling into me, then staggered upright and moved past me, toward the ocean. I raced after him, wrapping my arms around him, trying to hold him back. No! I shouted, but he didn't even glance at me, just continued ceaselessly toward her. He walked steadily into the ocean, and I followed, trying desperately to pull him back on land. Thank goodness there were no rocks here, or they would have ripped him to shreds as he blindly strode into the water. Her waves lapped around my ankles, then my knees. I yanked with all my strength, hating myself for thinking all this time that I had been stronger than any human. My waist dipped into the cold water, and my shoulders too. Was the water so cold that it could hurt him? My skin couldn't judge that anymore. I tugged and tugged, because all he had left now was his ability to breathe. Then, unhesitating, he dived beneath her waters. Still, I followed. 19. Her voice was loud in my ear.
You didn't answer me. Your sisters have been worried. What in the world have you been doing?
Ignoring her, I wrapped my arms around Akinley's chest. His eyes were open, blinking, but completely unfocused.
Let him go.
I tugged. No, I have to get him to air, I thought back.
He heard your voice. He's mine.
I couldn't pull Akinley up. There was tension, as if a rope were holding him to the sandy ocean floor. I beg you, spare him.
His death will let others live.
And yet I would bring you thousands in exchange for him, I vowed. Please, let him live, please. I could feel her grip on him, still firm. His eyes had closed, and I was running out of time. He was running out of time. Between my behavior during the last sinking and risking our exposure, I knew I'd already pushed past her limits. I had never disobeyed her before, not in 81 years, and I was asking for far too much right now. I had no doubt that however this ended, punishment would be waiting for me. I didn't care. For once, just once, I needed to keep someone alive. I begged the ocean wordlessly, opening my desperate thoughts to her. The ocean fell silent, but suddenly the tension disappeared. I pulled Akinley with all my might. There was no audible gasp when we got to the surface, and I worried that I was already too late. Was he breathing? She wasn't helping me when I swam, not in the way she usually did, and it was an effort to keep Akinley's head above water as I struggled to get us back to shore. I had thought my body was impenetrable, strong, but I was seriously weakened and exhausted by the time I dragged him up onto the beach. Harder than I meant to, I dropped his body to the ground, squealing a little when his head bounced off the hard-packed sand. If he wasn't dead, he was very deeply unconscious because he didn't respond at all. Please, I thought, please be alive. I lowered my ear to his chest and heard the most beautiful sound in the world, Akinley's heartbeat. I moved back and saw he was breathing, though his only motion was the slight rise and fall of his chest. My heart ached, a physical pain in my chest. He'd lost so much, was still suffering from his parents' death. I hated to abandon him, alone and unconscious in the shadow of the home he'd just offered me, but I needed to go back. I kissed his wet cheek, hot tears running down my face. I'm sorry, I cried, touching his face one last time. This is all I can do for you now. Please live. I love you. It took every ounce of strength left in my body to rip myself from McKinley's side and fling myself into the surf. Her waters created a vice-like grip around my arm, and she pulled me away before I could think twice. I watched the boats moored in Port Clyde until they were just blackened stars on the horizon. I was expecting death. Her guiding was so deliberate, I assumed I was being taken to a gallows of sorts. I quietly rejoiced that the others wouldn't see. I didn't want another Ifama burned into Miyaka's memory. She took me so deep that the anticipation of dying became overwhelming. Trying to push away my rising panic, I fixed my thoughts on McKinley, knowing he'd wake up eventually and be fine. I remembered all the little pieces of our day, wanting his kindness to be the last thought in my head as I went to my grave.
This is why I don't take wives. You will never serve me properly now. And see how you ache? Your little infatuation did this to you.
I could feel her anger all around me. Can you please kill me quickly? I asked, starting to cry. I'm afraid.
I'm not ending your life. Not today.
Finally, she released me onto the pitch black of the ocean floor. I knew I was hopelessly trapped. Her currents would never let me rise to the surface. I'd wander in her depths forever.
You've nearly exposed yourself and your sisters twice.
I recoiled at the anger in her voice.
You made the bride you so desperately wanted to protect suffer far longer than she needed to. You stopped singing, which alone is enough reason for me to kill you.
I know, I answered, terrified. I know.
Then I riffle through your memories with this boy, your little daydreams, and I see every single risk you've taken in the last day. There were 1,000 moments when you encouraged them to wonder about you. You were on the verge of forgetting who you are and speaking so many times. You could have killed them all.
I wept openly, thinking of Ben at the bottom of a bathtub, or Julie throwing herself under the kitchen faucet.
What's worse, you took what was rightfully mine. He ought to have died tonight.
You said you weren't killing me. Is that true? I doubled over in sadness, hardly able to think through it all. I've broken your rules. I know the penalty for that. And I will tell you plainly that if I had to pull McKinley from your hands 100 times, I'd do it. I understand your suffering, but I cannot be the balm for it. My hands were shaking. My tears mixed with the salt of her waters and vanished. I fear I will spend the next 19 years disappointing you. I don't want to compromise you or my sisters again, and I don't know how to bear the pain of being separated. I covered my mouth, dejected over my new reality. For as surely as the sun set in the west, she would keep me from McKinley until one of us died. I know the consequences of what I've done. Kill me if you must. There was a long silence, and I could sense her softening, that strange affection she shared with me above the others.
Do you think I rejoice in death?
I raised my head. What?
There is no joy for me in punishing you or in taking lives. I do what I must to survive. And not only would I not delight in your death, I would mourn it. You must know by now how dear you are to me.
I swallowed. Why me? Why do I have your favor more so than the others? She was so tender with me, lifting me up from the sand as if she were cradling a baby. Considering her timelessness and my temporariness, I practically was a newborn in her eyes.
Throughout my many, many years and all the sirens I've carried in my hands, none of them has considered me as you do. There's been a detachment, a deliberate isolation between them and me. But you come to me with a sweetness, an attempt to understand. You come to me even when you are not called. I feel for you what a mother feels for her daughter. To end your life would be to end mine.
I cried again. I'm so sorry. I never wanted to hurt you.
I know, which is why you shall stay. But you know as well as I do that you cannot come away from this unscathed. Miyaka and Elizabeth walk a fine line, and if they thought they could live however they liked with no repercussions, I fear for what would happen.
I trembled. There was far too much truth to that. I understand. So, what happens now?
She deliberated, searching for a suitable alternative. 50 more years.
What?
I'm adding 50 years to your time.
No, I pleaded. No, you can't do that.
I cannot bear to kill you. I've just explained how precious you are to me. Would it be so awful for us to have more time together?
Please, no! Don't make me live nearly 70 years more without him.
Her tone soured. Heed my warning. Banish him from your thoughts. I don't want to end your life, and I wouldn't want a reason to end his.
She let the sentence hang, and I found myself paralyzed. His life depended on my obedience. He spent so much time on the water. No, you can't, no! I was jettisoned upward as I heard her call for my sisters. Please don't do this!
You will come to terms with this eventually, she assured me. It's better than you deserve.
I can't. My spirit was so weak. I can't.
We'll speak soon, when you're ready.
Please. She left me on a thin beach covered with small rocks and debris. Picking up my hands and seeing the sludge on my skin made it seem as though I'd been left in a pile of trash. Was that what I was now? Truthfully, it didn't feel that far off.
20. I looked around, trying to make sense of where I was. Even in the pitch black of night, the sky had a strange glow. I heard the rumble of cars and realized I was under a bridge. I turned at the sound of running feet and saw familiar silhouettes. My sisters were rushing toward me. Behind them, New York City was ablaze. They searched the narrow shore, double-checking that we were alone. Padma knelt beside me first.
Are you okay?
I shook my head.
We were worried about you. Elizabeth fell to her knees in front of me. You stopped singing, and then you just left. Where have you been?
I shook my head again, tears running down my face.
What's wrong? Miyaka asked. Are we safe? I asked between sobs.
Yes, she assured me. We're under the Manhattan Bridge. There aren't many people out this late, and the noise of the cars will drown us out, so we're fine.
Where were you?
Elizabeth's hands were on her hips as she got to her feet, frowning.
The ocean told us that she was searching, but you wouldn't answer.
Miyaka put her hand on my shoulder comfortingly. We know the cruise ship upset you, but you didn't have to leave. I winced, nauseous at the memory of the bride's face, Karen's face, and of everything I'd been trying to outrun while I'd been with Akinlee. Nothing had changed. I took in a few deep breaths.
Gag me,
I begged.
What?
Padma asked.
Gag me, please.
Elizabeth ripped off her shirt and wrapped it around my face. I held it tightly against my mouth and let out the loudest scream my tiny body could make. The guttural rawness of it was such a departure from our pretty little voices, and it felt honest, more like who I really was. I didn't know how else to release the pain.
Colin?
Miyaka pleaded. I slowly pulled away the shirt.
She gave me 50 more years. 50 years onto my sentence.
Elizabeth cursed and Padma gasped. Miyaka embraced me.
I'm so sorry, but at least you're still alive. Am I?
Miyaka started walking. Come on, let's get inside. Under the blanket of night, we settled into a brownstone in Brooklyn. While the others unpacked their clothes and rearranged the new furniture, I wept in an empty corner on the floor. 2 full days I spent in tears. And when it felt like all the water was out of my body, I finally fell asleep. With Padma's enthusiasm driving them, the girls became tourists.
They went to the Statue of Liberty and as many Broadway shows as they could get tickets for. They looked for reviews of restaurants and clubs, turning Padma into another party girl. I sighed to myself, not ready to spend who knew how many more years watching this endless cycle of drinking and dancing and hunting. It felt like, despite my punishment, they'd forgotten all about me or how I might take to this kind of living. We were together as we'd always been, but I'd never felt more alienated. On one of their many evenings out, I found myself digging through my trunk. I looked at all those scrapbooks. I wasn't going to do it again. Knowing Karen's name was bad enough, but I had no desire to learn the names of her parents or of her flower girl. No amount of information could atone for what I'd done. When had it ever? I lifted the trunk and carted it outside. We weren't that far from the bridge or the water, though it took some work to get it down to that narrow shore. I stood there, bare feet gripping the rocks, and hurled each of the scrapbooks into the water. Goodbye, Annabeth Levins, and your faith in four-leaf clovers. Goodbye, Marvin Helmont, and your three-time winning rec baseball league. Goodbye to thousands and thousands of lives that I couldn't fix and that couldn't fix me. I threw my brush, some dresses I'd been hanging on to, and all my papers on sirens into the water. What was the point anymore? The last thing I came upon was my bobby pin, the one connection I had to my mother. I flipped it over in my fingers, watching my hand as it slowly streaked orange with rust. Then I flicked it into the water. Nothing was holding on to me anymore, and there was nothing left to hold on to. In the following weeks, the girls didn't notice that my trunk was gone, which said something, considering how tight our quarters were. For me, it was further proof that I was becoming invisible to them, little more than a rock that dragged them down. New York was a new kind of magic for Elizabeth and Mieka. A city that never sleeps was a perfect fit for girls who never slept either. And while Padma followed them, participating in their endless desire to see every little thing, I could see her wearing down under the weight of their adventures until one night it was too much. "You can't stay in," Elizabeth insisted. "This place is supposed to be the hottest club in the whole city." Padma playfully rolled her eyes. "So was the one we went to yesterday." Elizabeth shrugged. "It only takes a day for it to change. Come on, you can't miss this." "Leave her be," Mieka urged. "Padma hasn't been a siren that long, and I feel sure her life before this wasn't anywhere near this fast-paced." Padma unfolded a hand toward Mieka. "Thank you. No, it wasn't. So a night off will do me good. Besides, Colin could use the company." I'd been hearing their conversation, but only really tuned in when I heard my name. Peeking over from my corner on the couch, I saw all their eyes on me. How nice of them to remember I was still here. "Huh? You wouldn't mind if I stayed in with you tonight, would you?" Padma's eyes were pleading. I mustered up a smile, feeling bad for Padma. She was only following the other's example in how she lived and how she responded to me. Her life as a siren to date had not been the experience I'd wanted to give her. "Not at all," Elizabeth sighed. "Fine, suit yourself." Within 20 minutes, they were gone, and Padma had settled on the opposite end of the couch in leggings and an oversized shirt. She had disengaged from her old style of dress so quickly it made me feel broken again, so slow to change. "Thanks," she mumbled. "It's fun to go out and see new things, but it's a lot to take in." "I understand. I tried to get into their lifestyle, going out for drinks and dancing. I did it once," I said, holding up a finger. "I gave up right after." Padma laughed. "I can't imagine you in one of those dresses, shaking your hips on a dance floor." I grinned. "Exactly. It wasn't for me. I almost said I was more of a jitterbug kind of girl, but the thought took me 400 miles north. More of a homebody." "I like it. There's something electric about being awake in the night and all those strangers around you. It can be very distracting." Her expression shifted. "I wish it lasted longer." I focused, seeing the past few weeks afresh. I'd been so worried about my suffering that I completely forgot about hers. You still remember it all, don't you?
She nodded.
I went to the ocean a few days ago, and I tried to let her carry away my thoughts. I'm not sure that's how it works.
Yeah, she said, fidgeting with the hem of her shirt. I guess not.
She stared at the floor unhappily. I was failing her. She suffered in her own way and still had a century in front of her. How was her pain any less valid than mine? The source was different, but I'd ignored it in favor of my own. I scooted a little closer. Listen, I'm sorry. I know I've been kind of checked out lately.
It's okay, she said. I cried for hours once the sinking was over. Miyaka said I'd grow stronger, but I don't know. Either way, I understand how hard it was for you to take those lives. And then the ocean giving you more time when you're so close to the end? You deserve the chance to deal with what you're feeling.
My eyes brimmed with tears. Thank you for understanding. All the same, I'm sorry I haven't been a better sister to you.
It sounds like you've been keeping things together for decades. I don't blame you. I just wish I knew how to do this as well as everyone else.
Colin, you're the oldest. Can't you tell me how to forget? She implored. Suddenly, she burst out crying.
I can't carry this weight anymore. Please. It hurts too much.
I embraced her, holding her tight. I don't know what to tell you. It will fade, I promise. But even if, for some horrible reason, you end up holding on to these memories for the next 100 years, the day you are no longer a siren, it will all be over forever.
Yeah?
Of course. Do you think you'd be able to live your life knowing the ocean ate humans? That you'd spent a century helping her do that? Everything goes. It's like you get 3 lives. One with no idea how to live it, one with more power than anyone could imagine, and one with a true sense of self and the ability to pursue anything you want.
She wiped at her tears.
That's a small comfort, but it's so far away.
I smiled sadly.
I know, but don't worry. Soon your memories will go, I swear. There's no reason they should stay.
We were quiet for a while as she took that in, but I could see it was still haunting her.
I hate him, Colin, she whispered. He treated me like trash, and he tried to kill me. And my mother sat by, letting it happen. So I hate her, too.
You have to let it go. Hate makes it stay.
What if there's no room for love? She asked quietly, laying her head on my shoulder.
Don't be silly. I wrapped my arm around her. There's always room for love. Even if it's as small as a crack in a door, that will be enough.
2 weeks later, a homeless man attacked Elizabeth. She whispered in his ear to get him off her, and he threw himself into the Hudson. Not wanting to stick around, everyone packed up their possessions once again. Not me. From now on, I carried nothing.
21. An abandoned estate on an island off of Italy. A small house near a fishery in Mexico. A rental unit on the Olympic Peninsula. Different names for the same place. 4 locations over the course of 7 months was a lot for us. More than a lot. Though Elizabeth was the catalyst for the initial move, I could tell they'd all decided I needed space. Needed a place where I could speak out loud without worrying about being overheard. I thought it must have been Padma's doing, encouraging the moves to peaceful scenery and isolated locations. My sisters were hoping a change of setting would snap me out of my depression. And while I appreciated it, nothing they did could help me. As soon as I could manage it, I'd go live alone somewhere. It didn't matter where. I was tired of trying to be something I wasn't, and I was tired of feeling like a burden to my sisters on top of everything I felt for myself. Our current home was a large lake house with a grassy slope that eventually turned into rounded rocks and led into the ocean. It was isolated and had only a single well-worn dirt road leading up to it. If we needed to get to anything or anyone, it would take a solid half hour.
my sisters chose well. The ability to speak in open air was good for me, though it couldn't cure my longing for Akinlee or my sorrow over my punishment. The ocean tried to talk to me, but I ignored her call, grimly satisfied that she couldn't hear me if I stayed on land. Instead, I spent hours watching massive birds swoop down and pluck their meals from the water and listening to the sound the wind made as it punched its way through the trees. It brought me no joy. In fact, until now, I hadn't had a single reason to laugh since the moment I'd left Akinlee's side. What made me giggle on this otherwise inconsequential day was the extraordinary sensation on my leg. It was itchy. I was hypnotized by the feeling, the irritating warmth on my calf. I stared at the spot, just barely pink, which was also strange. Our skin was usually as unchanging and impervious to harm as the rest of us, but I was thankful for it. Of all the exotic foods and beautiful places shared, of all the diversions and stories offered, this tiny little novelty made me feel like there was a part of me somewhere that was still human. Colin? I looked over my shoulder to see Miaka bringing me a mug of tea. I stayed on my rock, thinking of how we were separated from the ocean and yet surrounded by her. I'd seen her so many different ways, flat as paper, impatient as a child, alive as a party. Right now, all she could be to me was an enemy. Penny for your thoughts? Miaka asked, settling in beside me. If I could arrange them into a proper line, I'd tell you. Miaka smiled, sipping from her own mug. How do you like it here?
It's fine.
Fine? Colin, we're doing our best to help. I stared into the endless day. I kept waiting, like Padma, for time to ease my ache. So far, that wasn't happening. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe you guys should go back to a city and leave me. I'm just going through something, I guess. Miaka nodded her head toward the water.
She's worried about you. Surely you can tell.
I nodded. She thinks I'm being petulant, that I'll get over it. I can feel that. I held the mug in my hand, taking in its warmth. Truth is, I don't know how to forgive her.
It's better than death.
It doesn't feel that way.
You are brave, Colin, and very smart. You can make it through 70 years.
It's not just that. I sat up, exhausted from holding it in, and looked her square in the eyes. I met a boy. Miaka gazed at me in confusion.
In one day?
No. I wiped at my face, forcing away tears before they could fall. I met him just over a year ago. He was going to school at the college we were living by in Miami. I met him in the library. Even though I couldn't speak, he talked to me, make me feel like an actual person. The day I stopped singing, I went to his hometown. His parents had died, and he had to drop out of school.
Oh no, she put her hand to her heart. Does he have any family?
He's living with a cousin and his wife. They actually let me into their house for a night, even acted like I could stay indefinitely if I needed to. They took me in like a stray cat.
If they were that nice, why'd you leave so soon?
I hid my eyes, ashamed. Akinlee and I spent the day together. By the end of it, I was lost, head over heels. He asked me to stay with him, and I thought I could do it. If I was smart, I could be by his side for years. It wouldn't be everything, but we could at least be together. A second later, he kissed me, and I spoke. He was song drunk and walked straight into the water.
Colin!
I know. He was supposed to die, but I begged the ocean to let him live. I got him back onto shore, and she punished me with life instead of death. And now his life depends on my behavior. He's a fisherman and on the water all the time. She's made it very clear that if I step out of line because of him, she'll eliminate him from the equation.
Miaka shook her head in disbelief. Why would she do that to you? She loves you.
It sounds crazy, but she seemed jealous, I confessed. Like he couldn't have my affection because it was hers.
But threatening you won't bring her your love.
She's not human, I reminded her. I'm not sure she understands all our relationships.
It might have been the closest I'd ever seen Miyuka get to being angry. She scrunched her face together, frustrated at my situation in spite of my stupidity in letting it happen in the first place. I won't tell the others, she said after a moment. I think it would rile Elizabeth, and Padma's so young she follows Elizabeth's lead in everything. She'll figure out who